one of the most fascinating things is when I, you know, just a simple fact of you buy a property and just timing the property right, you can achieve, you know, incredible growth and financial results. And I thought to myself, you know, people are making more from just buying one or two properties if they time it right.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors, find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategy. I'm Tyron Shum, and in this episode, we speak to Simon Liu, a successful buyer's agent who has built a portfolio of 12 investment properties. We'll hear from him how he learned from his mistakes, how he began building his portfolio, and about the moment when everything just clicked for him. Liu started out in a 9-to-5 sales job, who was looking to broaden his horizons when he started researching the mechanics of the property investing scene. Excited by the possibilities, he set forth on his property investing path. With hectic days, Liu says it's important to prioritize. He tells us what that looks like.
To be honest, I mean, as much as I'd like to have as much structure in my day as possible, as an active buyer's agent, I don't. Things just pop up. You know, if there's a property that needs to go under contract immediately, then I have to deal with all the negotiations and all that kind of stuff and put everything aside. So I have to prioritize a lot of things. But essentially, my day starts from when I wake up to when I go to sleep, and everything in between involves talking to clients, involves finding properties, talking to agents, talking to my contacts, to solicitors, to brokers, to tradespeople, property managers, all across the board. And it's a bit of a passion of mine, so I don't really have an issue doing it. But yeah, it is pretty full on. I've been a property investor for about 6-7 years now. Currently I'm a buyer's agent. I've been a buyer's agent for a little while now, helping fellow investors reach their goals through property investment. And part of my services also include mentoring a lot of my clients as well, in terms of how to reach financial freedom or financial security or whatever goals that they have in mind. And it's basically off the back of my own property investment journey. And I guess through that I've learnt quite a lot of experiences and lessons as well.
As a property investor, he says that his primary focus is understanding the numbers and using them to create wealth.
Basically, I focus purely on numbers. Property investment to me is a means to achieve my goals. It's really just about, you know, how to make money at the end of the day. I try to be completely unemotional and as detached as possible. So when I talk about numbers, it's all about, you know, things like what a property is worth, or the actual market value of a property, how much I'm paying for that property, whether there's cash flow positive, cash flow neutral, or negatively geared. And obviously if there's potential for adding value to the property, you know, whether it's a cosmetic reno or maybe a development opportunity down the track. I don't really focus too much on, you know, how nice or not or bad looking a property is, or whether I want to live in the property or not, because I know realistically I'm never going to live in it, let alone probably see it more than twice in my entire ownership. So basically just really focusing on, you know, the numbers, the investments, fundamentals of the property, and yeah, that's how I stick to my strategy and grow the portfolio.
Growing up with a non-English speaking parent in Australia, it taught him to make the most out of every opportunity from a young age.
So I grew up in Sydney, New South Wales, in the hills area. I came to Australia when I was 4 years old from Hong Kong. So, you know, I basically grew up here, you know, just really average upbringing. You know, my dad was working overseas, whereas my mum was here looking after me and my brother. I was mostly growing up with my mum. And back then, my mum, you know, was new to the country as well, and she spoke very limited English. And I guess from that perspective, I kind of saw how she struggled to raise two young kids by herself, largely in a country where she didn't speak English, and she had to learn to adapt and obviously, you know, just make the most out of the situation.
Lou said that educating himself on how to create and then build his property investment portfolio was how he managed to get away from a typical 9-to-5 job.
My mum told me recently that apparently I told her that, you know, all I wanted to do when I grow up was just to get a normal job and just work until I was 60. that was actually what I told my mum as a kid. But I guess as I was growing up, I don't know, like I think like I was never very good academically, so I struggled, you know, in high school, you know, studying and trying to get good grades and all that kind of stuff. And I think through that experience, even after high school, when I was sort of, you know, just going to music college and things like that, that I wasn't really interested in, but I just did it for the hell of it. Like, I think that started to shape, okay, what do I really want to do? What are my passions, and what, and most importantly, what I don't like to do? Because when you're not, you know, in university getting like a commerce degree or a medical degree or whatever it is, you're kind of forced to enter the workforce, which I did. And one of the most important, or one of the most common things that people start doing when they don't, I guess, have like a university education, is sales. So I entered various sales roles fairly quickly after high school. And I think from there, it started to instill the fact that, okay, I really don't like the 9-to-5 mentality. I don't like working, you know, getting up super early and, you know, having to work on someone else's schedule and obviously not get paid, you know, what I thought I should be getting paid, or what I want to be getting paid. And naturally I started looking for ways out, to get out of that kind of lifestyle. And look, I've always been actually interested in property. Like, one of the most fascinating things is when I, you know, just a simple fact of you buy a property and just timing the property right, you can achieve, you know, incredible growth and financial results. And I thought to myself, you know, people are making more from just buying one or two properties if they time it right, than they're making in 5 years worth of work, you know, working a normal 9-to-5 job. So I was just all the while just sort of thinking to myself, how can I make that happen for myself? And, you know, reading a lot of books, and obviously self-educating myself, on how to make a start. And I was saving my deposit then as well. So I guess that sort of, it sort of just slowly led to, you know, started building upon itself. And, you know, as it does, your goals change and your expectations change as well. So it's just sort of become bigger and better at every step.
Before beginning his role as a property investor and buyer's agent, his time spent in sales positions gave him some freedom to research and develop transferable skills.
I did recruitment. I did, you know, selling events, from both selling the tickets to attend events, and I also sold actual event venues for people to hold events. There was a stage where I did transport sales. So, you know, selling basically like couriers and delivery trucks and those kinds of things. So basically, you know, anything that I could really do at the time. I mean, when you develop your sales skills along the way, you can pretty much apply it to any industry. So what I was actually looking for along the way were roles that gave me a lot of time to you know, focus on property investing as well. So quite autonomous sales jobs. And I can only speak, you know, I can only say this while I'm obviously not in the workforce anymore, but I think like it's important, you know, because property investing, as you're doing it while you're doing a 9-to-5, is very time consuming. And unless you obviously, take on a buyer's agent such as myself, it is actually quite difficult to do it while you're working a 9-to-5, especially if that 9-to-5 is quite demanding. So I was deliberately looking at roles where I did have a bit of time, you know, freedom to sort of do a bit of research on the side and, you know, just invest in property as well as fulfill the role.
It is widely known that the first property you invest in is the most challenging. Lou took the time to research as much as possible before eventually purchasing his first property.
It was actually off the back of a lot of research and a lot of build up towards that first property, as most people, when they're about to embark on buying their first property, often undertake. So it was back in, from memory, I think it was late 2009. But, you know, even before then, I was just, you know, really spent every weekend out checking out units and various suburbs around the place. I remember I spent a lot of time in Newcastle as well, just looking everywhere and just getting my foot in the door of as many open houses as possible. I'd do all the research the week before and find out which properties I'd want to go to and line them up on the Saturday and just go bang, 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 one after the other. And it got to a stage where I got actually quite frustrated because I was always overanalyzing each property and talking myself out of buying whatever property that I saw. And it just came to a point where I was like, you know what, stuff it. You know, the next property that I see that ticks most of the boxes, I'm just going to go for it. So I ended up buying my first property in West Ryde in Sydney. And it was in hindsight, obviously, you know, we had a crazy Sydney boom that we've just experienced. But in hindsight, it was a bit of a mistake. I paid probably a little bit too much for it based on the market value at the time. And I was also lured in by the first home buyer's grant. I remember back in the day it was like $15,000. And yeah, like that was just the first experience. So when I first bought that, I did a bit of renovation on it. It was just an older two-bedroom walk-up unit. So, you know, did some painting, changed the tiles around in the kitchen and the bathroom. And I had to live in it for 6 months to get the $15,000 grant, which is great as well for me to experience living out of home as well. So, yeah, that was basically the first property that I bought. We all got lucky with the Sydney boom. You know, no one saw it coming. And if it didn't boom, if it was still stagnant, then it would probably, you know, still be where I bought it initially. And the cash flow didn't really make sense as well. You know, when I first bought it, it was costing me, I remember back then, a couple of hundred bucks a week to maintain, even after, yeah. You know, when you're first starting off, you know, and let's say, you know, I was on an average of $70,000 a week salary, you know, it's a big chunk off your paycheck every week to have to service this property. And that's not taking into account any maintenance or any vacancies. So if there was a vacant period or if there was any maintenance issues, then it'd be extra money on top of the $200 that I was losing out of my pocket. So in that sense, it was a bit of a mistake. Now, just that experience of seeing, you know, that negative cash flow in my bank every single month, I think that sort of inspired me to, you know, look at other avenues of investing in property. And that's when I started getting really focused on getting properties that have a positive cash flow. And yeah, basically, I just built on that.
Coming up after a break, we'll delve into how Lou grew his property portfolio.
So, you know, I was still obviously very interested in property. I'm quite stubborn as a person, so I wasn't going to let something like, you know, negative cash flow deter me from buying more property. So that's when I looked at properties that had more cash flow.
His amazing aha moment.
When I first started getting the bank statements, And when I first started getting the property management statements, was a bit of an aha moment.
And that's next. I'm Taran Shum, and you're listening to Property Investory. Hey, podcast listeners, are you enjoying listening to these stories and want more? Then head over to propertyinvestory.com and subscribe to receive your free property case studies that I only send exclusively via email. Just one of the many benefits of being part of this community. These real case studies are from experienced property investors where they share specific numbers of their portfolio, their strategies, and much more. Simply visit propertyinvestory.com to get your free case studies. Now back to the show. After purchasing his first property, he continued searching for more properties to invest in, which led him to look into those which generated more cash flow.
So, you know, I was still obviously very interested in property. I'm quite stubborn as a person, so I wasn't going to let something like, you know, negative cash flow deter me from buying more property. So that's when I looked at properties that had more cash flow. Now, back then, there was the granny flat craze was just starting out in Sydney. Now it's gone a little bit, you know, it's all over the place. But back then it was still, you know, just starting out. It was common, but it wasn't, not every single person was doing it with the blocks of land that they could put a granny flat on. So I was specifically looking in lower cost areas, lower socioeconomic areas that had the opportunity to build a granny flat on, purely for the purpose of generating more cash flow, partly to even out the Westride property, but also I saw it as a bit of a learning curve as well to actually develop something myself, even though it's just a simple granny flat. After many months of searching, you know, every weekend going out, checking out properties in Western Sydney, I ended up buying a house in Blacktown. And as soon as I bought it, it was another mistake because back in the day, like I actually didn't know the implications of asbestos. So I went to see this property. It ticked the boxes in terms of me being able to put a granny flat at the back and actually section it off, so it looks like a bit of a battle axe job as well. But the actual house on it was super old and it was all fibro or asbestos. And even the boundary fence was made of asbestos. And it was very naive of me to obviously not even pick that up. You know, I did a building and pest and a report on it as well. And I guess the building and pest guy was average because it, you know, I didn't read it. It didn't say on the actual building and pest report that it had that much asbestos in it. So I bought the property, found out about the asbestos, and just look, I mean, you just have to learn from the mistakes. You can't cry over spilt milk, especially when you're investing in property. After all said and done, you just have to deal with it. So, you know, I had to pay a lot of money for people to replace the whole boundary fence and obviously professionals to remove the asbestos, you know, professionally. And it also made the renovation of that front house a little bit more difficult because everything, all the walls and everything were all fibro. So I had to be careful about, you know, painting it and not sanding it too much and all that kind of stuff. But look, I mean, you live, you learn. And once again, you know, I bought it, I put the granny flat on. I did a lot of research, with, you know, builders and, you know, the rules and regulations on putting a granny flat on a house, you know, not needing to go through council and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, just basically did it. You know, I ended up getting a loan for the granny flat. As well, and back then the loan approvals were quite relaxed, so it wasn't that difficult for me to finance the whole thing. And after it was done, I just rented the properties out and got like 7.5% rental yield on it. And also, luckily, when I got it refinanced, it also had quite a bit of equity in it as well. So I pulled that equity out and then moved on, I guess.
It's clear that Lou has developed a passion and understanding for property investing, finding that it resonated with him as a wealth creation vehicle more than any other investing opportunities.
If you're really wanting to you know, get to a point where you're buying, you know, several properties, whether it's within the next year or 5 years or 10 years, it's something that you intrinsically need to have a bit of a passion for. Because whether you're investing in shares or properties or whatever, like there's a lot of research that's involved in pulling the trigger, or before you pull the trigger to buy whatever you're going to buy. And a lot of that research, you know, you really need to have a certain level of dedication and patience and passion to be able to get to a stage where you know the ins and outs and the pitfalls and the different strategies involved and all that, all the rest of it. So my passion for property grew as I kept buying properties. And I just felt it came natural to me. Like I'm not really into, like, I don't know much about shares, investing in shares and all that kind of stuff, but properties was something that just clicked with me personally. So I just sort of ran with it, really.
After purchasing the property in Blacktown, he diversified and began searching for more properties in Queensland. Although this turned out to be a mistake, he remains adamant that taking action will always be more beneficial to him than overanalyzing his next move.
After I bought that property in Blacktown, I started looking in Queensland because a lot of the properties up there offered significantly high cash flow. So the first property I bought in Queensland was a property I bought in Logan, in the Logan area. Now, this was a townhouse, a three-bedroom townhouse, and on paper, it looks like it had excellent rental yields. So I got really excited, and then I just decided to purchase it. It was really, really cheap. I think it was $150,000 or something like that for a three-bedroom townhouse. Yeah, especially when you're coming from Sydney, like it's really important. It's really easy to you know, not, you know, put things out of perspective because we're used to paying hundreds and hundreds, thousands, millions of dollars in Sydney for properties. So I got really excited. I bought this property, I owned it. And then even though I did the research on it, after owning it, I started to realize that it probably wasn't the best property, the best type of investment I could buy, primarily because of the huge body corporate. So this particular property wanted $3,000 a year in body corporate fees, actually no, $3,500, which was a lot to stomach for a property that's only worth, you know, $150,000, $200,000 at the time. So even though it was posting like on paper a 8 to 9% gross rental yield, my cash flow was only positive very, very marginally. And only later on after I purchased it and owned it for a little bit did I realize that, you know what, there's probably better value in the area. But look, again, one of those things, lesson learned, you just got to, you know, just take it as it is and just move on and obviously make sure that you don't make the same mistakes again. But I mean, taking action for me was way more important than, you know, analyzing and making sure that I'm investing in the right thing every single time.
Having overcome many obstacles in his property investing journey, it was all worth it when Lou had that shining aha moment where it felt like everything was falling into place.
I guess probably when I bought the Blacktown place, you know, earlier on, even though it was, you know, obviously I had those asbestos problems and all that kind of stuff. But after I actually, you know, did the renovation, I put the granny flat on, you know, I fixed the fence up and it just, you know, the dust settled and it just started to work its way as an investment property. When I first started getting the bank statements and when I first started getting the property management statements was a bit of an aha moment. Just the fact that, you know, when I was putting them in my spreadsheet every month, you know, the income I was getting from this property was way more than what the property was costing me to hold. And I guess that was like a really good feeling inside that I own this property, this house that I've bought, and it's actually not costing me any money. If anything, it's actually putting money in my pocket as I'm holding onto this asset that over time, you know, it's going to go up in value. So it was, that was just a really good like light bulb moment for me that this is the way of investing that I want to continue for myself. And yeah, look, I mean, it was, you know, for someone that was, that's quite young and quite new to the game, I guess it's really exciting that, you know, you've spent, you know, whatever deposit you've put into the property and you can actually see the results every single month as it happens. And also, you know, obviously subsequently we had a bit of a Sydney boom as you've probably experienced. And knowing that, you know, all the while this property is making me money every month, but it's also going up in value. And I was just like, it's just a really exciting moment. And you just start to think, okay, cool. How can I replicate this? How can I do this more? How can I get like 10 or 20 of these properties and just, you know, just keep doing it this way. And
so what's next for Lou in his current business venture?
I've bought a lot of these types of properties for myself. And, you know, they're all sort of reaping its own benefits. I'm at a stage where, you know, look, I've obviously quit my 9-to-5 job. So, you know, hopefully that life is behind me. I've started this buyer's agency and I'm really working hard on obviously, you know, growing this as a business as well. And just looking at the next stage or the next steps of my investment journey, you know, it's probably going to be a little bit different to what I've been doing. I guess I want to get into, you know, maybe some bigger and more interesting types of investment, property investment. I'm still going to be in the property industry, but maybe not just buying, you know, 3-bedroom houses in Logan or in Western Sydney or whatever. So just really looking forward to what's next. You know, at the moment I'm just sort of working my way towards a point where you know, I can actually you know, do some of this type of investing financially, in terms of getting, you know, the appropriate loans and all that kind of stuff as well.
So, inspired by this story and what Simon Liu is excited about today, we'll keep the conversation going in a future episode of Property Investory, where we talk about how to apply his strategy.
The strategy is for me, has always been about buying properties that are below market value and buying properties that have positive cash flow. That's the bare basic fundamentals of anything that I purchase.
The success habits Liu has developed for property investing,
you know, having that discipline and you know, your money saving skills as well, money management skills is probably, you know, a good combination to help you progress.
And that's next time on a future episode of Property Investory. Also, I would love to hear from you. If you own property or want to share your story, send me an email to hello@propertyinvestory.com and I'd love to feature you on the show. Thanks for listening.